Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine, and welcome, Sarah Ellen.
Hi, Susan. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing just fine. We were not in the path of the totality, but we got a 97% eclipse. How about you?
Oh, we had 94.
What did you notice?
Well, I had glasses thanks to a friend, so I really got to watch it. And for me, as it neared the 94%, I noticed there was red in there. It was like the coolest thing. It looked like, you know, a sliver of the moon, but
yeah,
different colors.
But red.
Glow. Yeah.
So red.
Yeah, it was so amazing.
Yeah. What I really noticed was how cold it got, and I didn't notice how cold it got until it started getting warm.
Mm.
And then I thought, oh, my gosh, I've been cold. And I could feel, I could actually feel the sun on my skin.
Mm.
And I realized I hadn't been feeling that.
Wow. The winds came along too. They said on our, the meteorologist said it dropped 9 degrees here during like the most complete blockage. So during the 94%, it was a drop of nine degrees.
That's what I really noticed. And it wasn't even that I noticed being cold, but I noticed getting warm.
Nice. Oh, I love that.
It was subtle enough that if you didn't know it was happening, you might have missed it.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
You might have just said, oh, it's a cold and cloudy day.
Right. You weren't aware.
But I watched the feed, the news feed, which had, of course, a person stationed in every town that the totality was passing through. And the totality was only 4 minutes in any one place. So we got to, like, see all these different groups of people in the dark.
Yes.
And then the lights starting to come back, and then we'd get to the next group, and it would, you know, start to, because the towns weren't, like, right next to each other, so you'd get a little bit of it each time as they went further and further north and east. It was fun.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Wow. Eclipse, solar eclipse, the magic of the moon being the size it is and the distance it is, so that it would precisely block out the sun. That's pretty cool. Pretty goosebump stuff, huh?
Oh, I so agree. And you know, I'll put this out there. My neighbor, after the eclipse, she sent me a flyer that said, what to do with your glasses after the eclipse. And I guess
what a good idea. Keep them for the next one.
Well, maybe, but also there's going to be an eclipse in Latin America. And so there's a group. To send them. Queens College is collecting them to send the kids in Latin America so they can watch
them. Oh, that is so perfect. I love it. All right.
So Queens College, somebody wants to send your glasses. Check it out.
Check it out. Queens College, send your glasses. That's Queens College, New York.
Right, I believe so.
Queens College in England.
Actually, it is Queen's College in England. Knight's Table, Pantry, Armory. I'm glad you said that. My neighbor is British. Yes, I bet it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it would probably cost you more to send them than they're worth.
Maybe so.
To have them sent across the ocean and then back this way. Maybe we should see if we can find somebody already in the Americas who's doing the same thing.
Yeah, they have an American address, actually, in the U.S.
Ah, they have it. Okay, wonderful. Yeah. Queens College, right, with an American address. Smart.
Okay, that's right.
Wow. So, let's see. It's been a long time since I've gotten a letter to read. It's not a long time since I've gotten letters. I get lots of letters, but I don't read them. But here is a letter that definitely needs to be read. Dear Susan, here is something that I wanted to return to you. It's taken me about 20 years to do that. 20 years since I went to your home, to your land, to be your apprentice. Honestly, I wish I knew then what I know now. I didn't want to be there. I followed someone else's vision of myself. And in the wake of going against my truth, I held too much of myself back. I was frozen, terrified, and not able to ask for any help. I'm the one who sent the tree falling down on top of one of my apprentice sisters. Do you remember that story?
I don't remember that.
Very oft-told story. I'm out in the woods with a group of 5 apprentices, and we're walking on top of one of the stone walls. They're very wide stone walls. You can, with care, walk on top of them. It's not like, walking across the pavement, but it's not treacherous either. We're walking along, and because you're walking on a wall, even though it's, maybe 3 feet across, it's a big wall, you still kind of want to put your hand out to touch the trees along it for balance. And I touched one of the trees, and the tree really, like, shoved. And I stopped, and I looked at it and said, oh, my gosh, this is a dead oak tree. Now, it wasn't a big oak tree, but it doesn't have to be a big oak tree to be heavy. And it was a dead, and I stopped, and I said to all the apprentices, I turned around and said to them all, don't touch this tree. It will fall down. And then I said to the apprentice directly behind me, don't touch the tree, it will fall down. And please tell the next woman after you and have her tell the next woman so that they would hear it twice, right? So she's the woman who touched the tree and pushed it down on one of the other apprentices. You had warned us against touching that tree. But I was unsteady. I just put three fingers on it. I didn't imagine that I could make it fall. Oh, I was shaken. I had caused pain to an apprentice sister and to the group. For this, I am sorry. And right now, I can't see the metaphor. I went on a journey that couldn't hold me, one that wasn't my path. You said I was only the second woman you'd asked to leave your land. Well, I guess that's the important part of my time there. Since then, Susan, I've always been eager to open your email newsletters and to receive green blessings from you and others. I deeply appreciate the gifts and knowledge you've gathered and have so bountifully and beautifully shared with all of us. I see your beauty, and I see my fear. I've been afraid of the unknown. Now I can imagine us having tea together and playing in your kitchen, brewing up something divine and magical. Thank you. I always feel your support.
Beautiful. 20 years. Wow.
20 years it took to bring her to the place of seeing herself sitting in my kitchen having tea and bring up something magical and wonderful. I am so blessed. I am so very, very blessed to see the long-term results of what I do. And to be able to remind us all, you don't have to be successful to be successful. Right? It's like, am I a failure because I had to ask her to leave? Is she a failure because she didn't complete her apprenticeship? No. We can't fail in those ways. It was an experience. And every single bit of our life is worthwhile experience.
That's okay. Yeah.
And I felt also so much the cognizance with your experience of realizing, oh my gosh, I came to apprentice with Susan for reasons that aren't appropriate. I think that's what you said, yes?
Right, yeah, like that I was seeking approval from someone outside myself, and I needed to gather that from within. It wasn't like, yeah, I wasn't ready to accept that, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so are we going to say you failed? No, you didn't fail. You didn't fail, and I didn't fail. You're another apprentice who I didn't graduate. Oh, horrors. But that's a failure for either one of us.
No, just like her. It was something I could have done to make myself tell you that I had to leave and just run out of there and Yeah, and take my time and then come back.
Right.
And love.
And because what goes on here doesn't involve itself with blame or shame or guilt or being right, you can come back. And she can write to me, and she can imagine herself having tea with me. She can see herself.
Mm.
How
so
amazing.
Beautiful.
It's so... it's so gratifying. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it really, really is. Just to... All of us, just lean into... You're doing it okay. You're fine. Right?
Yeah.
You see a way that you could do it better? Well, apply yourself. You see a way somebody else could do it better? Don't bother.
Sometimes I wonder, like, where I don't think I would be. I don't think I'd be where I am if I had stayed, you know, the extra 2 days and graduated an apprentice. I really think I needed the long road. And so, yeah, I appreciate the 20 years because I think this path was where I needed to be. It was, yeah, it was just a part of it. And especially the coming back and being so present in that, in the moment, and not worrying, like, what's she going to do when I get back? And it was just such a practice of being present and then getting there. And you were so loving and welcoming. So it was, you're awesome.
You're awesome, too. I love you so much. It's so wonderful, wonderful working with you. So Lisa and I went out today. We just walked and walked and walked and walked and walked for 4 miles. We couldn't stop looking at everything blooming. The daffodils are singing their bright golden songs, and the birds are singing. And there's insects out. Ouch. But that's okay because the birds need to eat, too. And I've already got a mosquito bite. Insect shield. I'm wearing my insect shield stuff again. Okay, ticks are rubbing their little feet together and getting ready to bite us. So get your insect shield going. And that's an actual brand name that sells clothing impregnated with pyrethrum. And or you can send them what you like to wear, and they'll put the pyrethrum in it. And then insect shield, it makes the ticks go away. Seriously. They have, like, pretty scars. I bought an extra scarf just to have for anybody who's here to wear, and it was so effective last year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Your scarf was beautiful. I saw you had it at the conference last year on the weed walk,
yeah,
or the fairy walk. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty light, you know, and ticks go away. Insect shield. And we're starting to haul compost and start seeds and do all that stuff. And you are packing.
And packing and packing and cleaning.
Oh, boy.
it's tomorrow's the day that the goats get picked up at 9 a.m., the goats and chickens. Yeah.
And then you're driving with them? Are they going ahead of you or...?
They are going in between. My husband when did he leave? On Saturday night. And so he is there setting containment. Yeah. So this should be interesting.
So he has already left.
He's left and arrived there yesterday.
And then are you going down by yourself? Oh, it doesn't really matter. It's so interesting. I was a little worried about the goats going off on their own, but I'm reassured that there's someone there to greet them that they know.
Yes, my husband will be there to receive them, blessed be, and they should be, he said, a 19-hour drive, and then I'll be there not too far behind them. I'll show up probably on Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah, the barn cats are contained, and now I just got to get them loaded into the car, so Whew, adventure's on.
It's really amazing how little it takes to start the change. There's a whole lot that it takes to actually complete it. All the packing and the papers and the driving and the data. But to start it just required your saying you were going to do it, right?
Oh, my gosh. You so know, Susan. I'm like sometimes with the moms and I'm like, why did we do all this? Like, what were we thinking?
What?
No. Yeah, because it was. It was like, you know, it didn't seem easy to find a place once we decided that, you know, we think we want to do this. But then that really kind of was the easier part, at least in the moment, I will certainly say that. But it's, yeah, one bit after the other, and then just no overwhelm. Mother Wort is there to help with those moments where certainly the overwhelm approaches, and just got to know that it will come together as it is to come together. And sometimes,
exactly.
You know,
there's no other way it can come together except the way it's going to. So.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, I can't tell you about who's going to be with us tonight because she can't be with us tonight. She's so sorry that she can't show up, and we're going to rebook her. But I thought we could talk about a variety of things, like the nutrition course I'm doing, which I'm having such a good time with, and or the chronic pain video course, which is now at wisewomanschool.com, available for you. Chronic pain, the 7 medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, gee, if we really run out of things to talk about, we can always talk about the Rick Plofer Quadrants.
Yes.
Not far from our minds or our hearts now, 3 weeks, tick, tick, before the Red Clover Conference. Oh, my gosh, I still have some readings to do. And, as we recall, Justine and I went to Woodstock to look at the tie-dye store for the tie-dye that I wanted for the Red Clover Goddess. And we found it. It was this beautiful, stunning heart tie-dye. And I said to them, this is what I want. And they said, we don't make that. It's this man out on the West Coast who makes it. Okay. So I got in touch with Marcus. Oh, I love your heart tie-dye, da-da-da. So good, da-da-da. With this wonderful conversation. He does the shirts. He sends them. They're taken to the silk screening place. And the silk screening place sends me a mock-up, and I go, that's not the shirt I wanted.
Oh, no. What?
Apparently, he has 2 different kinds of heart tie-dyes.
No.
And no, even though I send him a picture, and Kelly from the regular shopper I've gotten them before sent him a picture too, he didn't look at it. Anyhow, he has been a perfect gentleman. I emailed him and said, Marcus, oh my gosh, Marcus, you sent me the wrong shirts. This isn't what I wanted.
Oh, no.
And he said,
wow.
Okay, I guess I'll have to redo them.
Wow. That's so gracious.
Yay, Marcus, right?
Wow.
Okay, I just redo them. Wow. And I apologized for any unclarity that, I mean, I probably just said I want the hard tie. I never, for an instant, thinking that he'd do 2 different ones.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's a little bit his responsibility to say which one. But that's okay. You know, there's a shared irresponsibility here between Marcus and I. And so we're treating each other very nicely about it. At any rate, long story short, the Clover t-shirts aren't going to be ready for a while. Marcus is back in the vats.
Oh,
my plan B was to put the Red Clover Goddess on the back.
Mm.
And I might just still do it, even if we get the really good shirt, because the heart tie-dye is such a beautiful heart tie-dye. Maybe it'd be better to have Red Clover on the back. I don't know. I'm going to dream on this.
I saw the shirt, so without the bodice on it, of course, and it is a beautiful shirt. So I, however,
really,
I decide,
or just the shirt. If I could just get that particular shirt out of Marcus. I want this shirt, Marcus, these colors, this design, front and back. I want it all, Marcus. Give it to me. Aw. I tell you, it's one of those times where being autistic and not having an imagination really pays off. Because I didn't imagine what he was going to answer. I mean, I know from hanging out with other people that once something like that starts, they spend a lot of time in their head thinking about what the other person might do.
Isn't that so
true? Well, what if he says this, what if he says that, or what if he does this, or what if he does that? As a matter of fact, somebody once told me a story like that, in which a man has a flat tire, and his jack breaks when he tries to change the tire himself. He says, oh, man. So he looks around, he says, well, there's a farm over there, but they'll have a jack. I'll walk over there, and I'll ask that farmer if I can borrow his jack. And he's walking along, and he thinks, well, I'll offer the farmer $5 for borrowing his jack. Because, you know, that's a nice thing to do. He's going to let me use his jack. I'll offer him $5. That's kind of cheap. Maybe I should give him $10 for using the jack. That would be better. Yeah. What if that's not enough? What if he wants $20? What if he says, he wants to charge me $25 to use his jack? Wow, my gosh, that's a total high-rate robbery. By this time, he's up to the farmhouse. The farmer answers the door, and he says, take your fucking jack and shove it up your...
Wow.
Right? How often we do that to ourselves, eh?
So true.
So without imagination, I get totally surprised by whatever comes back, and what a delightful comeback. That doesn't mean I don't have a plan B. Right? There should always be a plan B, and if at all possible, a plan C. So whatever it is, you got a way to proceed. Like, I knew that Marcus had left on vacation. I didn't know how long he was gone. Right, like maybe Marcus is on vacation for the rest of the year and he's not going to answer my email. That I don't have to imagine that. I know that he's on vacation, but he's back.
Wow.
So shall we answer questions? Are there any hands raised yet tonight?
I see one hand is already up, and I'll remind everyone else listening that if you have a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, just press 1. That will get your hand raised in the queue, and I will announce your area code when it is your turn and open your line. I am seeing 3 hands are up at this time. And we'll go to the first dialed in from the 646 area code. From the 646, you are live with Susan.
Hello, Susan. How are you?
Hi. I'm really enjoying the weather today. How about you?
Good, yes. I'm in somewhere you're not too fond of, South Florida. You don't like the heat down here, do you? I know.
I
too
bet
much.
It was hot there today. Yeah, it was in the 70s
yeah.
here today.
Yeah. So, a couple of things. Nice to speak to you again. It's been a while. Do you remember a while ago, do you remember I had some issues with alcohol and I couldn't, I'd have one glass of wine and I was getting very sick the next day. I don't know if you remember, I phoned in, spoke to you. And I think your advice was to get checked for hepatitis C, which I did. Do you vaguely remember?
I do have, yes, I remember.
Oh, you do? Okay. So, did that, went to the doctors, had an ultrasound on my liver and so on, and everything came back all great. And then, and then a few weeks, still having the issue with the alcohol. And don't get me wrong, you know, I stopped drinking alcohol for 8 months, which is certainly not a bad thing for my body. But it'd still be nice to be able to go out and have a glass of wine or two with people, you know. Anyway, about 6 weeks ago, I had some terrible pain in the middle of my stomach area, and went to hospital and ended up having my gallbladder removed. I can't remember the terminology for it. It's where it almost becomes gangrenous with the stones hitting the side of the wall. Yes. So at first I was like, I said, I'd rather take a holistic approach and I'd rather keep hold of my gallbladder and try some healthy methods to fix it. And then I went on the antibiotics, and then I got home, and within 24 hours I was back in ER. So
it really hurts.
Oh, absolutely. So, so I ended up having that removed, and then ever since I've been totally fine with alcohol. Like, again, you know, I certainly don't want to drink much these days, but it seems to have been the issue. So I don't know if the liver is getting overrun.
Thank you for helping us all to understand this and to see how it was affecting you. How I had never known that the gallbladder did much with alcohol, but it's pretty obvious that it does.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing it must be that, but basically,
usually
I would have a glass.
Which is also bile, is said to dissolve fat.
Mm-hmm.
And most people get gallbladder attacks, if they're going to have an attack, after eating fatty food.
Okay. Right. But, I mean, it might not be connected, but it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if the liver was backed up with, I don't know if there was some, you probably know more than I, but I'm not sure the gallbladder was causing some backup into the liver, and the liver is overrun, and then, you know, you put some alcohol into the mix, and then, I don't know.
The liver makes bile and stores it in the gallbladder.
That's right.
So I actually don't know if the liver would just keep making bile, even if there's plenty there, but I don't think so. It's generally not the way the body operates.
Right.
Right? It's mm-hmm. It wouldn't be smart for the body to make more bile if the previous bile hasn't been used.
Yes. Because the bile thickens from what I've learned, right? If it's not used, it becomes more concentrated and then it gets thicker over the gallbladder.
Yes.
And then it can eventually turn into stones and then so on. Problems arise. Yeah.
It also has a lot to do with your genetics, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that could be. Yeah.
Yeah, that it's... I am so glad, however, that the removal of your gallbladder ended your pain. I was friends with a really wonderful herbalist who had terrific gallbladder problems. And she was just so devoted to taking care of herself with herbs. But it got worse and worse and worse. And finally she said, there is just no way for this to go on. I have to get my gallbladder removed. And when they removed her gallbladder and I saw it, she made them give it to her. She had one stone among many in her gallbladder that was nearly as big as her thumb.
Really? That's horrendous.
The whole gallbladder was huge. Huge. They were just totally amazed that she could have been walking around with this all these big stones.
Carrying that pain.
Yeah. And the real awful part of it was that once they'd removed her gallbladder, it didn't touch the pain. She was still in all that pain.
Right. That actually happened to me temporarily when they sent me home afterwards. They gave me the sign off, and then 24 hours later, the pain came back again. So I don't know if that was something to do with the pancreas being backed up, or sort of they said something about the pancreas could have been, what, the pancreatitis or something, they say?
Pancreatitis,
the pancreatitis,
yeah. Inflammation in the pancreas, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So all of those things, like, really, really give you, like, the kind of pain that you think, wait a second, I can't tolerate this at all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If you haven't experienced gallbladder pain or kidney stone pain or pancreatic pain, it's hard to even describe it to someone because it's a certain particular kind of pain.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for that. And then the other thing I wanted to ask briefly, if I may, is I started doing some herbal infusion workshops in South Florida in a few yoga studios in Delray and Boca. And I do a lot of reference to you. I take all your books in and show people, you know, and talk about Juliet as well. But one thing I've started doing is I've started doing the second part of the workshop that I do is I do a hands-on approach where people can make their own tinctures. But because of legal reasons, I always promote tinctures with alcohol, but for legal reasons, for them to take the tincture home, I have to do it with vegetable glycerin, which I know is then not a tincture. And I don't like vegetable glycerin based.
Why don't you have them make a vinegar or a honey instead?
That's a great idea. Yeah, making the vinegar. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's
really easy to make
vinegars.
Vinegars are such a great way to get minerals. Aromatic herb vinegars and any, you know, allium family, you know, garlic vinegar, onion top vinegar, those are all so delicious. Leek top vinegar. I love making vinegars of the hard parts of mushrooms. Like you get mushrooms and there's parts that you can't eat. You throw them in vinegar.
Oh, great. Like the really tough kind of stalky bits. I know it's not really
right,
stalk,
like the shiitake stalks, which are just, you know, no matter how much you cook them, they're just like, you know, rubber bands.
Yeah,
but you
like rubber.
Vinegar,
yeah.
The vinegar tastes like shiitake, and then you can actually eat them.
Oh, because they're
softened.
Because
they've been softened by the vinegar.
Okay. Just on the vegetable glycerin thing, because I bought a big 64-gallon thing.
64-gallon, oh, my gosh.
Oh,
64
sorry,
gallons?
I'm sorry. 64 ounces. I still
okay.
Work on the glycerin.
Half a gallon. Half a gallon, not 64 gallons.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. That'll be a lot. I'm still used to the British metrics.
Constituents are most soluble in glycerin?
I have no idea.
The reason that we make infusions in water is because the constituents we want are mostly water soluble.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
That we would make a tincture is if we want alcohol soluble constituents. Which are things like alkaloids and glycosides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And volatile oils. Glycerin and vinegars, as I said, seek minerals, and they take the minerals out of the plant, so they're a good mineral source. The glycerin is the ideal medium for getting hormonal things out of plants.
Ah. Interesting.
So my friend Rena Neeson in Geneva, Switzerland, right now, this time of the year, makes a glyceride of rose leaf buds.
Rose leaf buds, okay.
Right, like you go out and you look at them, at the roses. They have leaf buds on them, right? And she plucks those leaf buds and puts them in glycerin, and that's her favorite remedy for any woman, as she puts it, with disordered hormones.
Okay. All right.
Roots, all roots and all seeds contain phytosterols, so they would be ideal for glycerin.
Okay. Okay.
And you'll get more hormonal activity out of the burdock root and glycerin than you would out of it in alcohol.
Ah, that's interesting.
Right? It's part of the art of being an herbalist, is that you can choose a menstruum to selectively get from the plant the particular thing that you want to use.
I see.
And so sometimes you have to, you know, work with it a little bit yourself. Like, I use kava root for pain relief. And sometimes I make a decoction of the kava root, right? I make an infusion, and then after I've drunk the infusion, I add a couple of quarts of water to the root and boil it back down to a quart.
Okay.
And then I may re-decoct it. But I also make kava tincture. And I find they give different effects. They're definitely extracting different things. I can see a lot more resistant starch. Is that when I decoct it, the water becomes really milky and white, which is resistant starches. That isn't there in the tincture. And those resistant starches, of course, feed the gut microbiome, which is so critical to being able to utilize the plant sterols.
I see. So it's nourishment versus the actual extraction of the alkaloids itself from the alcohol extraction. It's the nourishment from
the alcohol extraction.
Yeah.
I get more tingling, right? I'm sure that I'm getting, you know, more of that part, but in the water extraction, I'm getting more of the other stuff. And I don't like just use one or the other. If I make a decoction, I'm going to be drinking that because I don't drink a lot of it. I'm going to be drinking that for like 3 or 4 weeks. And then I might use the tincture for 3 or 4 weeks and then go back to, so that I'm offering my body both things. And if I have a clear craving for one or the, like if I suddenly say, get yourself some kava root out of that bag, Susan, and start boiling it up, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can't do it wrong.
Okay.
You're not doing it wrong. And I don't like glycerides because they're pretty much something that I couldn't make at home. I can make my own vinegar. I could produce my own honey.
Okay.
So when I'm making those things, I'm within the realm of if worse comes to worse, I still can use and make my remedies. But if I'm dependent on something made in glycerin, it's very difficult for me to make that myself.
I see. So it can't just be a case of
using fresh plants. And it's also true of the alcohol.
Say again,
it's also true of the alcohol, but that's more difficult for me to make myself. That's why I always have the apprentices make a wine. And I tell them before we all had access to just going to the store and buying alcohol, when it was aqua vitae, when it was a precious thing, when it was a medicine itself, the alcohol.
Yeah.
And we didn't have much of it and didn't use much of it, certainly not the way we use it today. The way we got the alcohol-soluble constituents from the plants was by making them into beer and wine.
Fermenting, interesting. That's very interesting.
And sometimes even just soaking the plants in the wine, right?
Yeah.
Like May wine is sweet woodruff soaked in white wine.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, so I think I might have told you.
Yeah. So give yourself more room. You're doing great.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, Susan.
Okay,
I really appreciate your wisdom.
Sir.
I'll speak to you again soon. Thank you.
All right,
take carry care.
On. Good blessings.
Good blessings.
Bye-bye.
All right, and I am seeing that there are 6 hands raised at this time. We'll go next to the 808 area. From the 808, you are live with Susan.
Oh, this is exciting. Hello, my name is Daniela. How are you?
Hi, well, how are you tonight?
I'm good. A little nervous to be on here with you and having to choose which question of my many questions to focus on. But I'll do my best.
Oh, I hear you. That's always so hard to figure out which of the many questions to ask about.
Yeah, well, one stirred up by your conversation just now with the gentleman before me regarding alcohol use for tinctures. It's really hard for me to find the proper proof alcohol where I live in Hawaii. Do you care much about whether the alcohol is organic or not?
Not in the least.
Huh. All right. Just because we're taking such small quantities when we're taking the doses?
Actually, it's a touch more complicated than that. Okay. There are roughly 2 kinds of chemicals that you want to watch out for, water-soluble chemicals and oil-soluble chemicals. Water-soluble chemicals move very easily through our bodies and through the environment. I ate some asparagus for dinner tonight. There's a water-soluble compound in asparagus that I'm going to smell in my pee before I go to sleep tonight, right?
Yeah.
That's how fast water-soluble compounds move through us. If you get a water-soluble agricultural or industrial chemical, it's in and out of your body super fast. Oil-soluble chemicals, not in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So with the oil-soluble things, they stick around. As a matter of fact, they can't get out of your body. You can't sweat them out. You can't detoxify and get them out through your blood. If you could have gotten them out through your blood, through your kidneys, you would have in the first instance. It's not like your body made some mistake and kept these chemicals in your fat stores because it didn't understand it was supposed to get rid of them. It's keeping them because it can't get rid of them. Alcohol is not going to contain these kinds of chemicals. If there are any chemicals in whatever is used to make the alcohol, they're probably water-soluble chemicals. And they're probably long gone. In fact, what I find is that most people don't really understand where they need to buy organic. I said you can't get them out of your body, which is a tiny little lie. There are actually 4 ways to get these persistent organic pollutants or forever chemicals out of your body, also known as phthalates and other names. You can ovulate. Every time you ovulate, the egg that is produced carries some of these chemicals with it out of your body. You can ejaculate. Every sperm, like every egg, carries some of these chemicals out of the body with it. If you've been looking for a reason, girls, not to swallow, here it is. Boy, I tell you, that stuff is loaded with chemicals. Don't swallow it. You can put them into your milk. Milk is very rich in fats, and the chemicals are happy to leave your body in milk. And if all of the above is enough to make you cry, because it means that basically since we've been using agricultural and industrial chemicals, since the early 50s basically, that every sperm and every egg that is created, every child is pre-contaminated with these chemicals. and that every woman who breastfed her child gave her child a little extra bit of these. This has gotten so bad that women above the Arctic Circle are no longer allowed to breastfeed their children because there is so much DDT in their milk. And that's what we mean by forever chemicals. That DDT is the DDT that was sprayed here in the United States 75 years ago. So, what does that say to us? It says cry, because crying is the fourth way to get those things out of your body. You can't get them out with sweat. You can't get them out with any detoxification program. But you can ovulate, ejaculate, lactate, and lacrimate, the fancy word for crying. And you cannot put them in your body in the first place. I estimate that you would need to eat non-organic produce for 10 years to get the same amount of chemicals that you would get in a pound of non-organic butter or 5 gallons of non-organic milk or yogurt. I know a lot of people who buy organic produce and then stink when it comes to their butter and their dairy products. Similarly, olive oil. We need organic oil. Anything that's oil, that has fat, needs to be organic. Organic vodka? Give me a break. It's so inconsequential. Now, if you're going to tell me, Susan, every single bite that ever passes my lips is 100% organic, then I would have to say, well, it's very important for you to get organic alcohol then. But I have yet to meet a person like that, except for one young woman. She was in her 30s, and she was brought up on an organic farm. And she said to me, she said, Susan, I have never eaten anything that isn't organic. How is it that I am diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer at 34 years old?
Yeah.
And my guess is that when she said she ate organic, she meant produce. Does this put organic in a different place in your mind?
I've been mindful of this bigger picture of, you know, what's maybe more important to be organic or not, and these considerations. But still, good context. Good. Thank you for expanding the context there, because the only way for me to get organic 100-proof vodka out here is a big logistical nightmare, which requires networking with people on the U.S. mainland, because I can't get it here at the store, and it makes it seem like it makes the tincture seem less obtainable and a little less like the people's medicine, right? It's this big complicated thing that I can't really access.
I've never said anything about buying organic vodka.
Oh, no, that's true. I'm not saying I've heard that from you at all. That's my own thing of wanting to be
okay.
Organic possible.
So you're making it not people's medicine, but I've never done that.
Oh, no. Yes, that's true. Not you. All me.
Okay.
Well, you know, this is a perfect segue to my next question, if time allows.
Go ahead.
Along the topics of what you mentioned, this young lady that got diagnosed with cancer. I've not been diagnosed with cancer, but it is along the lines of breast cancer. Or just breast health, perhaps, is more appropriate. One of the things I appreciate about you is your ability to help people navigate the dance between people's medicine, if you will, and allopathic or conventional medicine. And everyone has their own unique dance.
Everything
there,
that I do is allopathic. I am not a homeopath. You actually only have two choices. Homeopathy, pathy means disease. So homeo means like treats like. Homeo, the same. So you have an itch, I give you something that causes an itch. That's homeopathy. Allopathy, which everything else is. Everything else is allopathy. You have an itch, I give you something that calms down the itch. Allio, against.
Of course. So, okay, then that's not what I meant. Then not allopathy.
All herbalists are allopaths. All chiropractors are allopaths. Allopathy is what makes sense to people. It doesn't make sense to most of us to give somebody who has an itch something that causes itching.
You're right. Okay, so then let's see. The more appropriate comparison would be maybe just conventional then?
Modern. What we're calling modern medicine. It's appropriate name. It's very, very modern, and we all know what we're talking about then, right?
Then, yes. Then that's the comparison I'm trying to make and figuring out the dance between these worlds that can very well complement each other. So I recently found a small lump on my left breast, and I've just been trying to figure out what options I have. I don't want to be one of those stubborn people that would say, oh, well, I would not get surgery if that seemed like the best thing if I was somehow diagnosed with something severe. But I don't want to jump the gun and jump into that world and go to get the mammogram and all the things, you know. So I know those are options.
How long has the lump been there?
Well, I noticed it about 4 months ago.
Has the lump gotten bigger?
No, and it ebbs and flows with my cycle. Does get slightly bigger leading
slightly
up.
Bigger and then slightly less big. I would like you to take your finger, any finger at all, close your eye and put your finger on your eyelid and move it around a little bit. Can you feel your eyeball under your eyelid?
Yes.
Okay. Now I'd like you to take that same finger and put it on the end of your nose and move it around the way you were moving it on the eyelid. In other words, you're kind of keeping your finger in the same place on your nose or your eyelid. But that feels different, right? It's like your whole nose moves.
Oh, uh-huh.
There's not something moving under your eyelid. You keep your finger in the same place on your eyelid. You can feel the eyeball rolling around under there. But you put your finger on your nose, it's all one mass, yes?
Yes.
Your lump feels like your eyelid or your nose.
Say more like the eyelid.
Then it's more likely to be a cyst. Cancers may be differentiated and form a lump that can move, but usually a lump that is cancer is integrated or tied into the tissue and doesn't move.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the simplest at-home way. It's not getting bigger. Cancer gets bigger. That's what cancer does.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Cancer does not sit around doing its nails. Cancer gets bigger. So after 4 months, if it hasn't gotten bigger, if it's cancer, it's more unlikely, it's not a fast-growing cancer. So it's either not cancer at all, or if it is cancer, it's not a fast-growing cancer. Both of those answers give you scope to work. And that also means if it starts to grow or if you get a very strong inner feeling that something has shifted or that you need help, you will follow that.
Absolutely.
But meanwhile, given what we know about this, you should be within a very safe area in taking care of yourself. In fact, my belief is that you are safer taking care of yourself than you would be if you entered the modern medical breast cancer treatment merry-go-round.
Yeah, and that's why I came here to hear from you what you had to say about that. Modern medicine has its place, and I can respect and appreciate that.
Absolutely. But, I wouldn't be talking to you if it wasn't for modern medicine and all those wonderful people who spent all of that time working on me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But it's not what we want for breakfast every day. Thank you, too. So, yeah.
Thanks.
So I think that violet, chickweed, red clover, if you have any cancer fear at all, then mushrooms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mushrooms are our secret weapon to make sure that whatever is going on, it's not going to spread.
Yeah, I've heard you speak in detail about how you like to go about that. So
yeah.
Thanks for the reminder.
And, and it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
So I like having something that I can do that will help me if the scary thing is happening, and it won't hurt me if the scary thing isn't happening.
Mm-hmm. And if it is, in fact, just the cyst, which is what I had been suspecting, what are your thoughts on, I believe they call it fibrocystic breast as well, when it's multiple cysts? I've only found one. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Breasts that tend to make cysts are breasts that don't tend to make cancer.
Oh, sounds nice. Okay, great.
Right?
Perfect. All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your time today and your dedication to these calls and hearing so many people back to back.
My pleasure. Thank you for sharing all that's going on with you.
Yeah.
Much appreciated.
I'll share save my questions for next time. All right. Have a good evening.
All righty. Dream blessings.
All right. And I'll remind everyone, if you've got a question for Susan this evening, just press 1. We'll see your hand go up in the queue and announce your area code when it is your turn. There are 5 raised hands right now, so we'll go to the 440 area code. In the 440, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. What's up today?
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, I'm breastfeeding my daughter. So,
lovely,
35.
Lovely.
Oh, thanks. What's
your
35
name?
I'm 35 female. Alice.
Okay.
I had a rough pregnancy, and while I was doing that, I got a blood test that showed high calcium. So I didn't really do anything, and then we were thinking about having a second child, so I went to an endocrinologist, and I redid the test, and I still have high calcium. It's 11.9. She's done it several times. They did an ultrasound of my thyroid. They found my left lobe is almost all encased in a nodule. The right side has a few nodules on it. So when the endocrinologist called me on Monday, I thought she was going to talk about these nodules on my thyroid, but she just talked about my calcium being high and how I might have I can't pronounce that, but she wants to do a 24-hour urine collection. But I'm just wondering if you had any advice on nodules and how to get calcium. You know, maybe it's because I'm nursing, maybe I'm actually deficient in calcium, or any information.
I'm having just a slight dissonance in trying to figure out the last thing that you said. Blood tests are showing that you have a lot of calcium in your blood, and you think that that's because you're calcium deficient.
because I'm nursing my mother, thought that maybe it was pulling to put in my milk. So then maybe instead of having high calcium in my blood, maybe it's actually pulling it from my bones, and I actually need more calcium.
Calcium in your blood should not be coming from your bones. Something is very off if the calcium in your blood is coming from your bones.
Okay.
Calcium in our blood should be coming from the food that we're consuming, the cooked leafy greens, the nourishing herbal infusions, the good dairy products, the good organic pasture-fed dairy products that we're eating. That's where calcium in our blood comes from. So right now, are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
I just started today.
All right. Wonderful. I just got a new scale. Wow. Then got some nice scales out there. What kind of scale did you wind up getting?
Kitchen scale that does ounces and grams.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and I took nourishing herbal infusions through my pregnancy, but then I stopped.
Got it. Well, you need them even more when you're nursing. They're so critically important for you when you're nursing because they help you maintain good mineral levels. I was just reminded today by Yvette talking about when Isaac was going through chemotherapy, which usually really crashes your minerals, and how he sailed through the chemo with fabulous minerals because of the nourishing herbal infusions that he was getting. And in my class on optimum nutrition, on this Thursday, I'm going to be talking about minerals. And one of the major points that I want to make about minerals, and I'm seeing some really good science backing this up, it's been obvious to me for decades, that the body needs and wants minerals, and it will always choose the very best minerals that are available to it. And if it can't get enough minerals, it will absorb lead, cadmium, mercury, all kinds of stuff that we actually don't need. So when there's a lot of calcium in the blood, that's why they looked at your thyroid, right?
Yeah.
Because usually there's a hormonal disturbance that's causing that calcium there. And does she think that the nodules on your thyroid are connected to the excess calcium they're finding?
But she also, now she thinks it's those small nodes that are the parathyroid.
So
she thinks that there could be a tumor on those. So she thinks I have two problems.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Parathyroid is more involved in calcium.
Right.
And often when there's that kind of involvement in the thyroid, the parathyroid is going to be in the soup as well. So the classic approach to this is castor oil pack.
Okay. I just bought that.
Great. And the castor oil is considered to be dissolving. There are certainly times and people where I have seen it do exactly that. They, you know, or really commit themselves to doing castor oil packs, and they melt whatever it is away. Most of those instances, most of those people have never gotten those masses biopsied, and so I couldn't say if they were cancerous or benign. Let's just say they were benign. Because I'm not so sure that castor oil would work that effectively against actual cancer. But there's a whole host of other lumps and bumps that can occur that aren't actual cancer. And cod liver oil is a really good first step there. It doesn't sound like the doctor or the establishment is thinking that it's cancer at this point.
Yeah, they're just trying to figure out the high calcium to see if what my diagnosis even is at this point.
Even is, exactly. Exactly. So I think if you take that action and couple that with some thoughts about what it is either now or at some other time in your life, you can't swallow. We are all, at one time or another, in a situation in which something goes on that we think, I can't swallow this. And sometimes we're just not at liberty to speak out about it then. Sometimes we do have to remain silent. I'm not saying that this causes what's going on, but I'm saying it can help uncause it.
Okay.
Right?
The castor oil pack, can you do that?
Castor oil pack and thinking about, you know, what have I swallowed that I need to get rid of now?
Yeah.
Right? This is about being in one's power, in your voice. And this is really a big deal for everybody. When I was doing chakra work with my mentor, Jean Houston, and her best friend, Gay Luce, and we got to the throat chakra, and we were spending about a week doing physical exercises with each chakra, and we got to the culmination of the throat chakra. Out of 120 people, 115 were laying on the floor sobbing and screaming and babbling.
Okay.
So it's a really common distress point. And that was really driven home to me when I was writing Abundantly Well and I was in the pharmaceutical part. And I thought, I wonder what drug is prescribed the most in the United States. And I thought it might be like a statin drug, because I know those are prescribed a lot, or maybe some kind of antidepressant or, you know, some kind of pain-killing thing. No. The most prescribed drug is thyroid hormone.
Yeah.
And a lot of it for women, because as a group, we find it more difficult to speak up.
Yeah, these nodules, 50% of women have them.
50% of women have them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or 50% of the people who have them are women?
Are women, yeah.
Well, that's about right. 50% women, 50% men.
Yeah.
It's always a difficult place to be in, awaiting results. And so taking action by doing the castor oil pack and drinking and nourishing herbal infusions, and getting some facts about what could be going on, those are all really excellent ways to keep yourself occupied. And if you need something beyond that, of course, motherwort tincture is a good ally.
Okay.
Waiting for results is one of the most difficult parts of modern medicine.
Yeah. The cancer thing with the mushrooms, that the last caller, where do I hear you talk about that, mushrooms? Where can I look that up?
Very simply, if there's any possibility that you're dealing with cancer, then using mushrooms on a daily basis is a really good place to start. Mushrooms tend to work much more effectively when they're in groups than alone. And one of my favorite groups of mushrooms is called My Community. And that is from Host Defense. And it is 17 species blended together. They also have Stamets 7, which is another blend of mushrooms. And there is a company called Real Mushrooms, which has five defenders. The big difference between Real Mushrooms and Host Defense is that Real Mushrooms are, in fact, real mushrooms, and Host Defense products are mycelium, which is the parent of the mushroom. Paul, who runs Host Defense, is a scientist, and he doesn't use things or sell things that are worthless. His products have been proven in double-blind studies to reverse cancer. Real mushrooms would have you believe that there's something wrong with using mycelium. I don't think there is. Where does Real Mushrooms get all these real mushrooms? China. They're grown in China. They're grown organically in China. Now, if that is not an oxymoron, which means two things put together that just don't really fit, organic from China is one, right? I truthfully used both. When I had a cancer diagnosis, I used Five Defenders, and I used my community.
Okay.
But I think if I didn't have a diagnosis, I would just pick one of them.
Okay.
But I definitely did not want to leave any stone unturned.
Yeah, I don't. The castor oil packs, can I use a cotton, like a t-shirt, or does it have to be completely like pure cotton, like white, like no dyes or anything?
What's actually usually recommended is a piece of flannel.
Okay.
So sometimes people have like flannel PJs or an old flannel shirt. But it shouldn't be a knit piece of material. It should be a woven piece of material.
Okay.
And you understand that it will never be usable again for anything except a castor oil pack.
Right. You put the
oil
on
the never,
cloth.
Ever, ever. Right. It's like you're donating it to the castor oil pack.
Yeah.
Right. That's
you
it.
Put the oil... You put the oil on the woven, and then you put it on the neck, and then you put a hot pack on it, right?
What I've always done is to put the oil on the flannel, wrap it up in foil, and bake it until it gets hot. Unwrap it from the foil, put it on, if it's a very sensitive place, put a thin piece of cloth, like a very thin kitchen towel, between the skin and the hot pack, and don't get it so hot that you'll burn yourself, right?
Yeah.
And then a covering over it. And the first times that I saw someone doing a castor oil pack for someone, they piled so much stuff on top of that castor oil pack, we were laughing. They're like, can I have a blanket? Good. Now can I have a pillow? Good. Now can I have another blanket? I mean, they're making like this mound on top of the castor oil pack.
Wow. And then you do it for a little bit of time and then longer, right? Like 10 minutes, then you go.
The interesting thing about any kind of external application is that you tend to get the benefit from it in you're right, in like the first 10 minutes of it. So you want to go longer, nothing bad is going to happen.
Okay. And you
but
can do it with
you've probably got 90% of the effect you're going to get in that first bit of time. So if that's all the time you have, you're not shortchanging yourself. You're fine.
Great. And breastfeeding, can you breastfeed with the castor oil pack?
I'm not sure why I wouldn't.
Okay.
Could you tell me what the problem might be?
They said because it's detoxifying you and it could go...
Wait, 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 wait I said nothing about toxins. I don't believe in toxins.
Okay.
And cancer certainly has nothing to do with toxins.
Right.
Who said that castor oil is detoxifying you? That's some heroic person.
The internet.
Who doesn't think you should breastfeed anyhow? Right? The heroic people
right.
say, food is the first addiction learned at the mother's breast. Healthy women don't menstruate or go through menopause, right? What? Don't listen to these people. They don't know anything about women.
I heard castor oil is for your liver to detoxify it. That's where I heard of castor oil first, ever.
Again, let me be very, very clear. There are no toxins in a closed system. Because if there is anything toxic in a closed system, the closed system dies. It shuts down. We are living in a closed system. It's called planet Earth. There cannot be anything toxic here. There cannot be any toxins in your body. You can have forever chemicals in your body, but they sure aren't in your liver. Every drop of blood in your body flows through your liver every hour. Now, I'm going to ask you to put something in your bathtub and turn on the water and tell me an hour later what happened to that something you put in the bathtub.
Is
it still there?
What did I put in the bathtub?
I don't know. What did you put in the bathtub? What did you decide to put in your bathtub before you turned the water on? A toxin?
It's not that. Yeah.
You put some toxin in your bathtub, and then you turn the water on, and you're asking me to believe that toxin is still there? It's impossible for toxins to ever be in the liver.
Wow.
It's a flow-through system. Again, heroic nonsense, girl. There aren't any toxins in your body. What's going on in your body has nothing to do with toxins, and castor oil does not detoxify anything. And it certainly doesn't detoxify your liver, and you're not even putting it on your liver, are you? You're putting it on your throat. Are we all, like, totally a muck on this, and you're somehow putting it on your liver without my knowing?
That's just how I heard of it. I never heard of castor oil before that. I found that on the internet. Okay. This is great information. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. I think I talk about castor oil packs in my breast book. Let me look and see if that is true. I know I have written about it, and that's the most likely place for it to be. And we have carrots, castor oil, and we have three places it's mentioned, and then we actually have instructions for making a castor oil compress. The commercially extracted oil of the seeds of this poisonous plant is the remedy most frequently recommended by the psychic healer Edgar Cayce for resolving lumps and growths. The poison is not in the oil, but if taken internally, it is a strong laxative. The classic application is a hot castor oil compress made by baking a flannel cloth saturated in castor oil in the oven until it is thoroughly heated. This hot compress is applied, covered, to hold in the heat and kept on as long as possible. In extreme cases, compresses are applied continuously day and night for small lumps. Room temperature castor oil is applied morning and night before bed and covered completely with a regular adhesive strip. Did you hear the word toxin?
No.
Did you hear the word detoxify?
No.
And Edgar Cayce never used those words. Castor oil pack is from Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce in no way Orissa, the castor oil detoxified or affected the liver as a compress.
Got it.
This is the problem with the internet and health information. It isn't very good information. And you really got to know your way around to avoid really getting your head turned on backwards.
Right.
Right.
I also wanted to just tell you how
and the worst sites are the ones that look the most legitimate.
Okay.
Okay. As always, you're going to learn more from people who've done it than from any place else.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for sharing with us tonight. Green blessings.
Green blessings. Thank you.
All right. And it looks like we have four callers that have their hand raised.
Well, it sure is a good thing there isn't anybody to interview tonight. We can answer all those questions. Isn't that great? And we won't need to talk about any of the things we said we might talk about. Ha-ha.
Yeah. See what others want to talk about. So first, from the 815, we're going to open your line. And now, five, you have five.
Hello.
Good evening, Susan. Hello. I was wondering if you ever prepare yellow dock roots to eat.
Mm-mm.
Just for tincture or vinegar?
Bitter.
Yes.
Yeah?
Super.
Super bitter. It's not going to make a food that will make anybody go yum yum. My friend Ray and I, when we were first exploring herbal medicine, which basically we would just about only explore by reading foraging books because there's so little written about herbal medicine at that point. So we made a lot of very odd things to eat, and it did not take long for people to start avoiding our kitchen. So what I suggest is, if you're going to cook like swamp cabbage or yellow dock root or something that's probably not going to be very tasty, that you do it by yourself so that you don't make other people think that they will be subjected to awful things if they come to your kitchen.
Okay.
I'm so glad that I did try to cook skunk cabbage on Ewell Gibbon's advice. He was wrong. He said that when you first cook it, it doesn't smell, but it does. It smells very, very bad, no matter how you do it.
And my other question is regarding blood sugar. I've been having really intense blood sugar crashes, even though I'm eating consistently with balance. Food. So I was wondering if food combining makes a difference, or
I don't know
if
what you mean by balanced food.
With balanced food with protein, carbs, and fat. Like having all three present when I eat, and yeah.
Okay. Putting stuff in your body doesn't mean that it's going to get to your blood. So, could you give me an example of a meal?
Yeah. Well-cooked vegetables with soaked grains and, like, well-cooked vegetables, rice or quinoa with, like, a piece of salmon.
Okay. And you soaked the grain and then cooked it?
Yeah.
Okay. For a moment, I thought you were saying you had just soaked it. Soaking grain pretty much removes all the B vitamins from it. Unless you actually cook it in the liquid you soaked it in.
Oh, I soak grains with water and whey, and it's like 50-50. Sometimes I switch out the water or I cook it. It's recommended to cook it in the water that it's soaked in.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Those the B vitamins, if you're just soaking and throwing the water, you're losing the B vitamins. I personally don't soak grains because, to me, it makes them mushy, and I don't need to lose that. And since you have access to whey, just cooking them in the whey is sufficient.
Okay.
You don't need to soak if you... As a matter of fact, for this nutrition class, I was just reading about this because there's some real scientific inquiry, and they found that basically the traditional, what they're calling the traditional method of cooking grain, which is to cook the grain in exactly as much water as the grain will absorb, right? So we put 4 cups of water, 2 cups of rice. It's actually 2 cups of water, 2 cups of whey, and 2 cups of rice. And when we cook that, there's no liquid left of any kind. And that preserves the greatest amount of nutrition. Any soaking, any pre-processing of the grain, and you lost a lot of the B vitamins, almost all of them in some instances, and you alter the starch in the grain so that it is more likely to spike blood sugar.
If you soak
in other words, by soaking it, you make that grain more easily convert into sugar in your body, whereas if it's cooked, like a whole grain, like the quinoa or the rice, without soaking, it's going to take your body more time and more effort to digest it, and so the blood sugar will remain more stable.
That's good to know. Is there anything to perhaps...
So when you say well-cooked vegetable, that's a green vegetable,
roots. Green vegetables, cruciferous vegetables, broad spectrum of vegetables, and they're all cooked for over an hour, like you recommend.
Wonderful. And you're having several vegetables with that meal?
Most of the time I have a cooked vegetable plus a fermented vegetable.
Great idea. What a good idea. That's wonderful.
So even with that combining, I can still have blood sugar crash after I eat, and I'm wondering if there's an insulin resistance and what can be done to...
So you're measuring your blood sugar because you've been diagnosed as diabetic?
I have not been diagnosed as diabetic, and I am not measuring my blood sugar. This is just my experience of feeling intense blood sugar crashes, even with eating well and walking after I eat and including vinegar in my meals, all of those things. I still have violent blood sugar crashes where I get really tired. I can't focus. I feel like I could pass out.
And this occurs after you eat?
After I eat, or if I've waited too long to eat. Both.
Mm-hmm. The resistant starch is going to be a key thing here for you. And after you cook your grain, I'd like you to refrigerate it for at least 3 or 4 hours. You don't have to eat it cold. You can heat it up again to eat it. But refrigerating potatoes or grain after it's cooked causes a conversion in the carbohydrates so that resistant starches are formed. And those resistant starches, which are literally indigestible, feed the gut bacteria that help you not have blood sugar crashes.
So no soaking grains and refrigerate. I usually cook grains in bulk, and that first
meal. And so you do usually
have...
refrigerate it. Good work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except for just the first time I eat it. But all then there's multiple meals after that.
And
I
there's
eat.
Multiple meals, yeah. That always makes the most sense to me, too. If you can cook a pot of rice, you might as well cook a week's worth.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to cost you the same amount of effort to cook a week's worth as a meal's worth. So you can go for it. So, I really hear you, and I have no reason to disbelieve that your blood sugar is crashing. And I wonder if there's another explanation for the things you're experiencing.
Hmm.
Just hold that in your mind for a while and see what comes up. See if there's any other thing, because it just seems kind of unlikely that really what's happening is that your blood sugar is crashing.
Hmm.
Right? Does it seem likely to you?
Well, my inquiry with it is there some kind of insulin resistance? Where my
you
body isn't...
To find that out.
That would
we
be useful.
We can't figure that out just by talking about it.
Okay. So the next step would be...
Especially because we don't actually know if that's what's happening, right?
Right.
Right. That's your theory.
Yes.
Yeah. But it could be any number of other things. There is a regular rhythm that almost all people experience in which sometime in the afternoon they are going to feel tired and foggy and a little out of it. That's a natural biorhythm. And that's not necessarily a result of a blood sugar crash or insulin resistance. I was also told by Native people that the way they diagnosed diabetes was to taste the urine and it would taste sweet. I'm not sure if that's true, if there's insulin resistance. But I thought that was a pretty fascinating thing. And a Native woman who was there took me aside after she heard a man tell me that. And she said, you can do that. She said, but you can also have the person pee on the ground and watch to see if the ants come. And I thought, oh, women are so clever, right? Men are just going to drink the pee. But women are going to like, what the ants tell you, girl? You know? So you may be onto something and maybe not.
Okay.
I don't really know. And if you really think that you need a blood test, that would be your next stop.
Okay. Is there a specific request for that blood test?
You would
other than
go to... You know, it depends on if you have a primary care physician. You simply tell that primary care physician, I think I'm getting blood sugar crashes. Do you think I could be pre-diabetic?
Okay.
And I don't think that they do the glucose challenge anymore. When I was pregnant and they tested my urine, and it seemed a little high to them, and so I had to come in fasting, and they gave me sugar to drink. What? And then they tested my blood, right, over a period of time to see how my body was dealing after fasting with being loaded with sugar, and I passed the test. And that's called the glucose challenge test. I don't know if they still do that. It's kind of a strange thing. And I remember feeling really like, kind of stoned by it. It's like, yeah, you get up and you go to the hospital and then you drink a bunch of sugar. It's like, woo! And then people are sticking you and drawing your blood every so often. Very trippy.
Yeah. Okay.
So
thank
fortunately,
you.
I did not have gestational diabetes.
Great.
But I was glad to see her on the scene and making sure.
Okay. I will further investigate. And I just wanted to share one thing as well, is that now it's spring. I have been eating a lot of dandelion greens and roots,
and I have, it's just an amazing experience. I've never engaged with dandelion at this level, and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, how wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with me. All right.
It's wonderful. So thank you. Thank you for
Green blessings. Good night.
Green blessings.
All right, and we'll move to the next caller. You're dialed in from the 914 area code. From the 914, you are live with Susan.
Susan?
Hi. Hello, are you still there?
Me too. Hi. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Can you? Okay. I wanted to revisit... I had some new information come in since we last spoke, and I wanted to revisit the topic of radiation for breast cancer treatment, because I've had surgery, and it went so well, and now I just, and I got my Oncotype score on Friday. Like a six.
Out of.
And so I need to confirm that it's 6 out of 100.
That's really
that's
low
my
then.
Understanding. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a 3% chance of recurrence over 9 years if I take hormone therapy, and like 5 to 6% if I don't. And then there's less
than 1%. Okay, so do you know what these percentages are percentages of?
Recurrence?
Well, do 100% of all women have recurrence?
I think it's
no.
Just for my, no.
A percentage is a percentage of something. 6% of nothing is meaningless, right? If I give you 6% of 100,
mm-hmm.
I've given you 6 things.
Mm-hmm.
If I give you 6% of 1,000, I've given you 60 things.
Mm-hmm.
A percentage has to have something it refers to. So here's the how I usually explain this to people. If I told you that there was a drug that would reduce your risk of hip fracture by 50%, would you be interested? Most of us would.
Yeah.
Suppose I told you that there was a drug that reduced hip fracture by 1%. Would you be interested?
No.
No. What we need to know here is that your risk of fracturing a hip in any given year is 2%. 50%
mm-hmm.
of that risk is 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those statements were actually true statements about the drug Fosamax. It reduces your risk by 50%, but your risk is only 2%. What's your actual
mm-hmm.
risk of recurrence? It's not 100%. Most people assume that it's 6% of 100%, but it's not. It might be 6%
mm-hmm.
of 2%. It might be that women who do nothing, that 10% of them have recurrence. And then your
mm-hmm.
risk
mm-hmm.
is 6% of that 10%.
Mm-hmm, yeah, right.
The figures are much, much lower than you think is what I'm basically saying.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that because that was not made clear by the radiation specialist or the oncologist.
They don't get classes in how to understand statistics. They don't. They don't know.
Yeah.
They don't understand. I mean, this is a kind of mind-bending thing to think that 50% and 1% are the same.
Yeah.
But 50% of the risk, that's the part we have to hear. And that's what you were told, is that you have a 6% chance of this coming back, but 6% of what? They didn't tell you, and that's the really important part of it.
Okay. Yes, I will clarify that.
So you need
that.
To find out how many women have a recurrence. How many women in your situation have a recurrence? Is it all of them? Is it half of them?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I'm aware that in my situation, there's completely clear margins, no metastasis, no lymph node involvement of any kind. There are still a small group of people who do have recurrence.
Yeah.
Really small group, and I'm not going to be in it. But there aren't ever any 100% when we're dealing with cancer. You're never 100% safe, and you're never 100% screwed either.
Yeah.
Except in a very few instances, and there are a few instances, but I just listened to this man talking about this really wacky story in which it turned out that what he thought was a really bad hangover was actually pancreatic cancer.
Oh, God.
And, and he's actually alive to tell this story. I mean, you don't survive pancreatic cancer. And he says, don't listen to the statistics. He said, first of all, they told me I couldn't have pancreatic cancer because I was too young, but I did. And then they told me I couldn't survive it, but I did. So pay no attention to those statistics. That was his message. I thought, pretty bold message there.
Yeah.
Now, he did some pretty heavy-duty therapy. I'm not saying that he just, like, you know, chewed on dandelion.
Yeah. What else did he do?
besides the modern medicine, pretty much nothing besides modern medicine. But he has a really good attitude.
Yeah, a good attitude.
Yeah, he was involved with herbs or anything at all. Right? He was even reluctant to tell the doctors that at first he thought it was a hangover because then he thought that they'd, like, you know, dismiss him as a drunk.
Yeah. No, that's funny.
And I think he said his pee was black and his poo was white, and his girlfriend said, honey, you got to go to the doctor. That's wrong.
I'm glad he did.
Thank goodness for the girlfriends.
And I'm just in this place where, again, another limbo of deciding about, first up, the radiation, and because you know, that it's within a certain time limit, you either do it or I've only found women who have undergone the radiation. There are very few people that I know. I don't think there's any that I know that have refused it. And there's just not the same data on that.
Women who refuse it, basically. I have been really taken aback by how little I have been followed. They're basically not interested in me anymore. Now, I understand there's lots of people out there dying of cancer. They don't want to die of cancer, so they're going to focus on them. But on the other hand, I think it would be, like, important to follow people along after you've treated them, especially if they refuse certain parts of it. Do you suppose that I know the statistics for refusing chemotherapy? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You're simply not going to find any information about those of us who said no, because it doesn't get into their records.
Yeah.
On the other hand, that also means that there aren't any women who've refused it and died.
Uh-huh.
But there are women who've accepted it and died.
Right.
There are women who've accepted radiation and gone on to either die of recurrence of breast cancer or to have heart attacks from the radiation, caused by the radiation.
Mm.
It's really hard on your heart, that breast radiation.
Yeah. Well, I just kind of, if I do if I am bold and brave enough to refuse it, I mean, it's bold and brave to undergo it as well. So it's, that goes both ways. But a plan, and I guess my plan is to continue to take the nourishing herbal infusions and the mushroom tinctures, like the ones you just spoke about.
I never took mushroom tinctures.
Which I've been taking.
I never, ever took mushroom tinctures. I've never said I took mushroom tinctures. I honestly don't believe in mushroom tinctures. I take mushrooms. I take the actual mushrooms, the powder. I consume the mushroom. The powder.
Okay, so my community powder.
Powder. Our Five Defenders powder, or Stemmeat 7 powder.
Powder. Okay, okay.
Powder.
Thank you for
not tincture.
Clarifying that. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Tincture's okay if you just,
taking the powder.
You know, want to take some mushrooms because they're adaptogens, and maybe you want to think better, or you think it will help you do this, that, or the other thing. That's not a problem. But if you're just really actually dealing with cancer, it's got to be the powder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tincture's just not going to get you there. In my lights.
And, okay, I will switch to the powder.
Yeah.
And I also love the idea of, also because I have BRCA1, I love the idea of the castor oil packs, like on the breast, on the back,
yeah.
on the pig,
yeah.
on the stomach,
yeah.
Like all
Great
of
idea.
That in rotation.
So I think it's important that you remind yourself that you're not refusing radiation. You are choosing
mm-hmm.
other methods to prevent recurrence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whenever they said to me, well, you refused chemotherapy, I said, no, I didn't. I chose a different way
yeah.
to do what you would do with chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I was talking to Lisa today when we were out walking, and I said, you know, really my big, big gripe with the radiation is they do not tell you clearly up front what you're getting yourself into. They really don't. And they're afraid to.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid people just wouldn't do it if they really knew the consequences. And I said,
mm-hmm.
if someone had said to me, Susan, if you choose this radiation, we might be able to get rid of your cancer, but it will cause you to be in chronic pain for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been clearer to me what I was actually choosing. If
mm-hmm.
the radiation
yeah.
oncologist had said to me, there's a chance that this radiation could actually bore a hole through your vagina and cause a fistula, which will cause you incredible pain, I might have made a different decision. But
yeah.
all in all, I don't know that, but I do know that it was neither courageous nor brave to have radiation, and that I would have
mm-hmm.
been
mm-hmm.
far better off if, on the days when my body was screaming at me, don't go, I hadn't gone.
Mm. Mm.
I went faithfully every single day of my 6 weeks of treatment, and I shouldn't have.
Thank you for that.
If there was any one thing that I would have changed there that I could have done, it would have been to cut myself more slack. But, of course, because I wasn't doing their chemotherapy, I felt obliged to really do their radiation so that they couldn't say, well, it didn't work because you didn't do the chemotherapy.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that, the trade-off
yeah.
choice.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I found them very, very devious when I tried to get information out of them about the damage that radiation does. They were not very forthcoming. They weren't going to tell me
right.
up front, and even when I asked, they weren't going to tell me. And
mm-hmm.
even though they gave me reams
yeah,
reams and reams of papers and printouts and this can happen and that can happen, none of it was really the information that I needed. And I didn't know what I needed to ask. I didn't know that I needed to ask, what kind of damage, what kind of long-term damage will this do?
Right. Yeah, they kept referring back to just the standard of care.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. And or that they don't have data on, like...
That's right. Or everybody's different. But the fact of the matter is that while everybody is different and while they don't have data and while it is the standard of care, it causes heart attacks. It causes intense pain, and that pain can go on for the rest of your life.
Mm.
And part of my pain is lymphedema.
From radiation.
From radiation, you got it. And that is also something you live with for the rest of your life.
Yes.
And they're really not forthcoming about the lymphedema. Lymphedema is like the, we ain't going to talk about this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think they want to talk about it with the sentinel lymph nodes.
Right.
Either.
Right. And especially if radiation follows surgery in which lymph nodes were removed. And we don't know.
Right.
We don't know why some get lymphedema and some don't. We really don't. Everybody I've talked to says, we have no idea, Susan. It wasn't anything you did or didn't do. You just happened to draw the lymphedema card.
And is there a way that you can, that you treat that?
Yeah, you have to treat it every single day for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it, what,
do you,
it, and
you treat
you
that with herbal medicine?
Well, cleavers are certainly a good help. And I have a lymphatic a specialist who comes and gives me a massage every two weeks. Ideally, you're actually supposed to have a lymphatic massage daily, but who could afford $150 a day? Certainly not me. And, and compression is a really good idea. However, my lymphedema is coexisting with an indolent wound, which isn't healed, and an ostomy. So when I'm under compression, it really messes my wound up big time, and it's very hard on my ostomy.
It's a rock and a hard place,
And of course, the wound, the unhealable wound, is from the radiation, right?
Yeah, well, thanks for reminding me about the massage op, because I think I just want to do that anyway, just post-surgery. So,
Good.
Yeah, thank you so much,
thanks
Susan.
Thanks for calling and checking in with us and keeping us, you know, in tune with your story. So appreciate it.
Thank you. It just helps me so much, too. And green blessings. Thank you.
Green blessings. You're not alone. There's love for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
All right, we have just under 90 seconds. You want one more call?
Sure, let's see if we can do it.
The 845 area code, you are live with Susan from the 845.
Hello, 845. Is it Titania? Oop. Hello, 845. Seconds are ticking away. Well, we're reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients. Thank you for being part of this reweaving. And thank you, Sarah Ellen, for being with us tonight in the midst, literally in the midst of your move. I am so filled with gratitude for you. We're returning herbal medicine to its rightful place as people's medicine. Green blessings and good night, everybody, until next week.